Blog Talk Radio.
Another great episode of Living with Hope with your host, Cherie Thomas. The Power of Pain Foundation is proud to be the premier sponsor for the show. The Power of Pain Foundation is a national 501c3 charity bringing medical information, education for patients, caregivers, and healthcare professionals, and supporting chronic pain patients with neuropathy pain conditions. Donations are tax deductible. For more information, please visit our website at powerofpain.org. The Power of Pain Foundation. Through our motivation for a cure, we are turning pain to power. Enjoy the show.
And good morning, everybody, and I hope you had a terrific week going into the weekend. Yay, love them weekends. I've got a great show this morning, and we are going to be talking about back pain. There are millions. You know, I was going to, before the show today, look up the figures of how many millions and millions of people live with chronic back pain. And I know for myself, it was like, well, we can do surgery. And it's like, nah, I don't think so. And it's like, well, we've got a lot of medications these days. Again, nah, I don't think so. So I actually have a terrific guest this morning, and we are going to be talking about an alternative. And again, I should remind everybody that this show does not endorse any single treatment or doctor or medication. What we do here is provide information. You can then take it to your doctor. You can do a little research on your own. And I like to throw out possibilities for you. So before I bring my guest on this morning, I do want to mention tomorrow on my Saturday show, my fun day at 3 o'clock Pacific, my guest tomorrow is going to be Candy O'Donnell. And I'm really looking forward to that. We have a lot of fun over here and a lot of readings and great tunes and just a really fun show. So make sure if you're not doing anything, just stop on by here tomorrow at 3 o'clock Pacific, and we'll see you then. So I'd like to go ahead and introduce my guest this morning, and it is Esther Goclay. Good morning, Esther.
Good morning.
Oh, thank you so much. Do you have the figures on how many people are living with chronic back pain? I meant to look that up and I forgot.
You know, the incidence is 80%. So 80% of the population can expect to have back pain severe enough that they have to go and see someone about it.
Oh, my. Oh, I had no idea it was that. Wow. Well, let's go back a little, and maybe you could give us some information about yourself and then what led you to get into this area of study.
Well, you know, I came at it the hard way. It's the way you develop your passions. I had a very severe back situation when I was 9 months pregnant with my first child. I had an L5-S1 disc herniation and agonizing pain to go with it, you know, down my, like you have an ice pick in your buttock, you know, couldn't drive, couldn't pick things up. It was horrible, and it didn't respond to any of the usual conservative or alternative measures. You know, I tried physical therapy and chiropractic and acupuncture and massage and checking my head regarding what's wrong with me. I did not want to take pain meds because I was nursing my baby. You know, this pain continued after delivery, became worse and worse and worse, and it wasn't really livable. I was just walking around the block every 2 hours to try to get out of severe muscle spasms so I could go back to sleep to wake up again in a couple of hours and have to walk around the block again. So that at that point, I opted for surgery, and surgery gave me some relief, but the problem came back. You know, in a couple of years, I had the same problem, the same disc re-herniated, and they wanted to do another surgery. And I was still in my mid-20s, so this was really not a good, you know, you don't want to make a habit out of back surgery.
Right.
And, I had to kind of cast a wide net, look far and wide, and find other ways to help my problem. And anyway, long story short, by doing the things that I now teach, I managed to avoid the second back surgery. I was able to have two more children without any pain whatsoever. I had been recommended not to have any more kids because I had bulging discs and a fragile back and what have you. And it's been now over 20 years that I've not had a back pain, nor a back twinge, nor a back ache. I have zero problems from my back. And I now have the great pleasure to teach people how to empower themselves, you know, in this regard.
That is wonderful. And I know Esther's book is called 8 Steps to a Pain-Free Back. And I have it, and I've got it sitting right here. It is wonderful. Sometimes different books, it's a lot of reading. And it's like, I am a person, I cannot visualize very well. This book is fantastic. She has pictures and pictures from all over the world. I was so impressed with what you did. You traveled all over the world and the different cultures and how they seem to avoid the back problems we seem to have. I think the more civilized countries, the more back pain, right?
Yeah, it goes with industrialization. So the non-industrial cultures have really low incidence of back pain, as low as 5%, 7% in the highlands of Thailand, 5% in some African countries, compared with our 85% is strikingly different. And so I think it's extremely interesting to see what it is they're doing differently and how we can, what parts of that we can mimic. And the good news is that it's not rocket science at all. It's not trivial. You know, it takes me and the teachers that I have trained around the world, it takes us 6 lessons to teach someone how to sit differently, how to lie differently, bend, walk, lift, exercise differently. And in doing all of those modifications, those little edits on everyday actions, there's a solution. And so this is a very exciting message because people don't have to take a whole lot of time out of their day. They're just doing their everyday activities differently, and then those become their exercise and their therapy. So, and it doesn't take a lot of money, you know, just some training. And then you're your own, you know, you're doing your own healing. And so it's a very exciting, empowering message. You know, we're telling people you are well-designed, you know. Contrary to popular belief, our backs are well-designed. We are designed to be upright, and we can live into old age without so many problems and pain.
Wow.
But you do have to learn.
Right, and practice, right, once you, and that, again, this book has got wonderful step-by-step. I mean, it's a big book, and it's got so many pictures, and you know something?
Yeah, we have 1,100.
You,
over
1,000
illustrations and photographs, and, yeah.
You know something else I liked about it, Esther? You don't have a skinny mini model doing it. It's like... no twiggy in the book. And I like that. It's like this is a real lady, with a real person, not someone that's never ate anything in their life. So I like that too, because a lot of times, I know I've been told it, and I've been thin and fat. But it's like, well, if you lose weight, your back will feel better. No, because even
when I'm
thin,
there's actually very little data showing that. There's, you know, the correlation between weight and back pain. Until, you know, if you're really obese, then that can be a contributor. But if you're just 20, 30 pounds overweight, that doesn't correlate with back pain very much at all. So it's the wrong notion to tell people that, oh, it's the weight that's causing the problem, you know. So, you know, the people I use as models in these other cultures include people who are pretty robust, you know, like the Fijians and the Samoans and so on. In my book, you know, they're solid guys and women, and they don't have back pain. So, you know, I think alignment is very important. Now, when you're misaligned, then of course weight weighs against you, pun intended. You know, height counts against you as well. So, but if you're well aligned, you know, just because you're a little taller, a little stouter, shouldn't send you over the edge into pain.
Okay. Actually, I got more than one person commenting this morning. I was doing some promotions for the show, and it was what I was getting in messages was like, well, I've got real back problems. It's just not a strained muscle. Now, I happen to have spinal stenosis myself. So if you could maybe address that, because I think people are misunderstanding your message. Of course, they haven't seen the book like I have, but that, well, yeah, if you sprained your back, this might work. Not if you have an issue like spinal stenosis or something,
Good area to address. You know, when you are presenting the public with something that is new, it's a new paradigm, the people you tend to get are people who have tried everything and everything has failed, and then they come and see you. That's how it is. So we see people who have had 3 failed back surgeries, who've got all kinds of scoliosis in their back, and that's who we're seeing, and that's who we do well by, you know. So Yeah, it's easy to fix a little back sprain, but you know, if you really address the root cause of your problem and reintroduce good length into your spine and a good shape the way nature designed you to be, then it's surprising how many seemingly complex problems can clear up. So, for example, on the DVD that's also available on Amazon and on our website and everywhere, it's called Back Pain, the Primal Posture Solution. And on that DVD, we have four subjects, and one of them had had two back surgeries and was supposed to have another one. He was supposed to have a fusion, and he was stalling because, you know, fusion surgeries, I mean, the first two surgeries hadn't helped him. And fusion is a bigger step, and there's more downside. So he was kind of holding out, but he was taking 7 Vicodin a day, and, you know, the quality of life was quite miserable. And then he came to my program, and, you know, you see him on the DVD. He's back to doing weights. I get emails from him. He's traipsing around Africa. He just wrote to me from China. He wrote to me, oh, we were just getting on the plane and we saw this article about you, because the New York Times just wrote a full-page article about me and my work, and China picked it up and Australia picked it up and so on. So, you know, here he is. He was, like, emailing me. I can't believe it. Here I am in China. And in Africa, traipsing around, doing things I never expected to be able to do again. And anyway, so it's fun. You know, I love seeing challenging cases because it's that much more satisfying. You know, people have given up on themselves, given up on their bodies. The practitioners have given up on them. And then, you know, it's really fun to be able to solve those challenging problems, because, you know, they do respond with our gentle ministrations.
Right, and it's just amazing. And I would guess that it's a little hard for people to imagine, because they want to operate, you know. My poor husband, same thing, and it's like, I don't think so, not going to do that. So
yeah, it's unusual that your husband is saying, I don't think so, because a lot of people are so desperate. They just grasp at straws, and surgery seems so definitive and, you know, offers hope. But the statistics are not good. Usually people don't go there and examine, you know, what the downside is. They just, you know, surgery is kind of accepted and they go for it. So it's unusual what you're describing, that your husband is resisting and so on. Which I think is a very sensible thing to do. If you really need surgery, it's amazing, fantastic that there are people who are skilled enough to do it. But you don't want to rush into surgery. That should be a very last resort. And until you've tried, you know, things like what I teach, which is to change your structure, change your posture, you really haven't given things a good chance. You haven't given your body a good chance.
No, absolutely, yeah. And the minute they said surgery for him, I started investigating. I have had over the years many doctors on, so that's where I've learned it's like, no, not such a good idea. That, and we know people too. I mean, failed back surgeries, it's a whole industry within itself in the medical community. I mean, doctors advertise, yes, we take patients with failed back surgery, and it's like, really? Are there that many that we can make a whole industry? And there are. So, no, I don't think so. Well, Esther, is there one foundation, one thing that is pretty common with everyone with back trouble? Or are there a set? I mean, is my back trouble?
So there are a number of things. There are a number of common mistakes. Top of the list, I would put that most people have some degree of compression in their spines. They are standing too short. They're sitting too short, too crumpled up, too S-shaped, too C-shaped, or too melted into themselves, I-shaped. And what I teach people is to have a J-shape, a tall J-shape in their spine. So getting length back in the spine is usually very important, and is a very good first measure, because there are simple techniques that will help you elongate your spine. And I mean, you know, really physically get taller, like measure taller. And I teach stretch sitting as a good introductory technique, and also stretch lying. And so what you're doing is you're putting your body in gentle traction using the backrest of a chair, and you have to modify it a little bit. It needs something sticky there, so we have a cushion with little sticky nubs, but it could be a towel, something with friction that will hold you in a taller shape. And we actually teach this technique. I have an online free teleseminar, and people are welcome to sign up on the homepage of our website. And then, you know, they just, all you need is a computer, and then you just learn how to elongate your back, you know, because you have to kind of curve forward and you have to push your arms so the top of you is kind of separating from the bottom of you to some extent. And then you hook yourself against a towel or a backrest or some nubs in a chair. I have designed a chair as well, which allows, I call it the pain-free chair. And it has these little nubs in the backrest that you can actually hook to and be a little taller as you're sitting. So this is
wow.
Extremely useful first technique, you know, so that you're not sitting there just crumpled up in your chair and blaming sitting, for example. You know, people have gotten to become a fashion to blame sitting these days.
Well, and as you're saying that, I'm sitting up straighter. I do tend to crumple up in my chair.
Yeah, you don't want to thrust your chest out and sit up straight either, you know, the way parents advocate to their kids, because that tenses up the muscles in your low back, and it's not sustainable. It's fatiguing. It makes them sore, and it's not healthy anyway. So you want to sit up smart, not sit up, you know, in a tense, straight fashion. But
what
anyway,
is your website, Esther? Before we go any farther, what's your website so I can post that in the chat room?
Sure.
For some reason, I don't have it.
Sure. It's goclaymethod.com, and that's spelled GOKHALE, method, METHOD.com. But people can also find me just by my name, you know. If you just type in Esther Posture, you'll find it. Or if you, these days, you just have to type Posture Guru, because the New York Times called me the Posture Guru of Silicon Valley. And that will lead you to my name, which will lead you to my website and so on. So you don't have to remember that much to find it on the website. The website. So goclaymethod.com, and we have these free online teleseminars to teach people stretch sitting. And then there's also a technique, stretch lying, where you dig your elbows into the bed and you lower one vertebra down at a time until you get to the top of you, and then you elongate your neck as well, and you put your pillow in a special way, you know, a little bit under your shoulders, not just under your head, and that will give you a little bit of extra length in your back and neck, and will help jumpstart the process of growing taller, you know, because in the beginning I just tell people just lie like that for 5 minutes and then do whatever you need to do to go to sleep. But people, it's a very comfortable and healthy position, so people end up getting seduced into falling asleep that way. You know, and then they've got hours of stretch going on in their back, and that adds up, you know, so they're actually becoming taller. So that's top of the heap, you know, get a little taller. And then the next thing I like to teach people is to remodel their spine. I like for them to create a J spine and have their behinds out behind them, not stuck out behind them, but, you know, have enough buttock musculature. So that it's kind of holding the bottom out behind you. You know, it's not normal to have your tail tucked. And people are unfortunately taught to tuck their pelvis. But it really doesn't make sense. It's not what's normal. It's not what we used to do when we were 2 years old and didn't have back pain. It's not what our hunter-gatherer ancestors did. You know, they all had their behinds out behind them. And if you look at any old art and old sculptures like the Greek statues and so on, they have their behinds out behind them. You know, all the populations who don't have pain have their behinds out behind them. They have a J spine. They're not sitting on their tails. They're not tucking their tails. And we're taught, tuck the pelvis, I think it's a very unfortunate bad guideline that we've gotten that's become part of our culture.
Wow. Yeah, because like you said, babies, and you've got so many cute pictures of babies in there, but their spines are just fine. So apparently, I mean, you know what I do, and I bet you'll just fall off your seat when you hear this, but I sit on my foot all the time. I am always sitting on one of my feet, and I'm just guessing that probably really whacked my back out.
You know, maybe not. You know, it may be an instinctive way of providing yourself with a little bit of cushion that you don't have built in yet, you know. Because when people, I don't know, I mean, over the phone, we can't talk too much about glute strength and tone and stuff, but, you know, a lot of people don't use their glutes when they walk. They use their quads, they tuck their pelvis, they kind of shuffle along. They're not using their buttock muscles. And buttocks are meant to be used, you know. Every step is supposed to be a rep, you know. Like you use your buttocks to kind of propel you forward. And if you're doing that, then you got some built-in cushion and you got a built-in wedge and your behind is out behind you and so on. So you may be using your foot as a kind of substitute cushion, you know, as a kind of support for your sits bones. And that might be, you know, a really good thing to do. But long term, maybe you want to build up your internal cushion
yeah,
so that you don't
definitely.
Move your foot that way.
Yeah, because I just can't hardly sit straight. I always, and I know when I'm younger, now I think my mom did that too. And when I was younger, I kept, you know, it's like, get off your foot. And so I assumed that that was a bad thing, but maybe not. Well, is there anyone, maybe we should throw this out there. Is there anyone, number one, you should always check with your physician before you try anything, even something as benign as this, but is there any back conditions that absolutely should not try this method?
You know, there are certain conditions where you really would need, you want to have a teacher guiding you. You know, if you have severe SI joint dysfunction, sacroiliac joint dysfunction, or you have an L5 S1 disc herniation like I did, you know, then you really want to be watched more carefully. And I would recommend not just working with the book. The book is, you know, I really tried hard to teach in earnest, you know, and put a lot of illustrations and photographs so that people could follow along. But I think for certain conditions, you want hands-on guidance. And disc herniations and in general, anything that's, you know, really painful and delicate and unstable, it's best to have hands-on instruction. And if you have hands-on instruction, you know, it doesn't matter what your condition is, it's going to be helpful to improve your posture. So I would say no matter what you have, improving your posture is a good thing. You know, it's like, you know, asking, like, are there any conditions for which you wouldn't want to eat a healthy diet? You know, no. You want to eat a healthy diet no matter what's happening. And similarly, you want to have healthy posture no matter what's going on. It is such a basic thing, you know. And what's nice is that it can sometimes have such a strong impact on the conditions, you know, on the pain, even seemingly hopeless conditions. You know, we have so many people who come to us as a last resort. We have people come with their surgery dates already booked, and it's not infrequent that people will cancel their surgery because, you know, their symptoms cleared or they made such so much improvement, they're encouraged to keep trying more. And, you know, so it does happen that we make a lot of impact. But, of course, you can never know ahead of time in any given case, you know, how it's going to work. What we can just tell people is, like, it's unusual for it to not work.
Right. Well, now, you're based in San Francisco, correct?
We're in Palo Alto. Actually, I'm on Stanford campus, and the studio is in Palo Alto. But we have teachers all over the country and all over the world. And we also travel.
Ask you.
So we have teachers, you know, in Chicago and Portland and New York City and Boulder. We have them all over in England, and we have increasing numbers of teachers in different locations, and we also travel and teach. So if they, you know, if people want a teacher in their area, if they spread the word and we get enough requests from a particular city, we, one of our teachers will travel to that location.
Wow, that would be great. I could see you going into corporate corporations and teaching
that.
A whole group. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
because
that's like if someone, you know, wants to get this and, you know, thinks that it should be in their company, and if they introduce us to the HR professional or so, I mean, we have a lot of corporate requests right now, and that is a really good way to learn, because then you learn with your colleagues, with your teammates, and then they can help reinforce, and that's very, very effective.
Right. So how important is proper breathing in this, in the whole scheme of things?
Great question. It's part and parcel of healthy posture. You know, your lungs expand in whatever direction offers least resistance. They're just like two balloons and they're filling up. And so what you want is that the resistances be optimal. So you don't want a lot of resistance in your back, because all those muscles are so tight that, you know, the breath can't really move that area. You want it to be pliable and relaxed so that the breath can actually move and massage and heal those areas. You also want the chest muscles to be relaxed, the intercostal muscles, the pectoral muscles, so that when you breathe, your chest can move. Chest breathing is different from neck breathing. People confuse the two. But, you know, whereas neck breathing is problematic, chest breathing is very important and healthy. And so you want that to happen just in the background, you know. You just want that to be, you want those areas to be moving and the blood to be circulating just as a byproduct of breathing. So breathing is very important, and is also a way of kind of diagnosing how you're doing with your posture. Because if you find that only your belly is moving, then you might deduce correctly that your abdominal muscles are a little weak, and or your intercostal and pec muscles are a little too tight, and or your back muscles, your erector spinae muscles, are a little too tight. You know, so then those areas are not able to move, and your belly is the only one that can move. You don't want that to be the case. You want your chest to be able to move, your back to be able to move, and you want your abdomen to be able to move when it needs to, like when you need control or when you need extra breathing, but not just as a default.
Okay. Well, I wonder, so how, assuming we're all born with the perfect alignment, and I would imagine that sitting, standing, everything just comes natural when you're a baby. Is it a cultural thing that somehow we start taking these postures that get our spine out of alignment?
That's what I believe. And when we say cultural, there are different ways in which we influence our young ones to be a certain way or not. You know, so the way we hold them and the way we, in the furniture we give them, you know, it has one set of influences. And then the way we model for them, you know, like the way we are, they're copying us. So that's another set of influences. And we really want to fix both. We want to mold and model our babies well. And so, yeah, they start perfect. You know, almost all babies are born perfect, right? It's a rare situation when there's a genetic problem. And, you know, and then the question is, what do we as a culture, you know, do for them? You know, are we helping them? Are we supporting their healthy stance, or are we encouraging them to self-destruct? And unfortunately, right now, from a musculoskeletal point of view, we're really not having a good influence on our young ones.
Yeah, because I would imagine one thing would be to suck that gut in. that doesn't.
One thing is what? Suck that belly?
Yes.
Is that what you said? You know, there's a way of engaging your abdomen that looks good, it looks svelte, and it's also healthy. There are other ways where you kind of tuck your pelvis and kind of evacuate your air that neither look good nor are healthy, but, you know, they maybe look thinner, and so people do it, but it's not very effective or healthy or beautiful, really. So, yeah, you know, but I think I'm thinking more of little kids like the strollers and the car seats, and those are huge problems because they're shaped wrong. And so that is something, it's on my radar. I am beginning to work with companies to shape that up.
Wow.
That's, yeah, badly, badly needed, because it's just a stain on our society that we do so badly by our young people.
Wow. And you travel the world taking these pictures just to, I mean, I noticed a lot of pictures in the country where they have, well, things on their head, the baskets and this and that. And I noticed how straight they stood and how straight their spine was. So, and there's other countries that just naturally don't get into our bad habits, I guess.
Yeah, you know, they're just beginning from with the way they carry their babies, and then of course, you know, you have the families all in one place, like grandparents are in the fields bending over and helping influence how the child is held and handled, and you know, and so things happen. It's a kind of kinesthetic wisdom that gets passed down through the ages. And we're missing that because in our culture we transplant ourselves a lot. And so that kinesthetic tradition is broken. And so we have to learn it. We have to build, you know, we've got other ways. I mean, we have such a fantastic possibility as a nation, you know, because we have some really good kind of mindset, you know, that we are open to learning from all over the place, you know. So, okay, we unfortunately don't have our grandparents and grandkids all in the same village, you know. So that's been lost, and it's, you know, not that easy to reconstruct, although I think even there we could improve some, you know. I think we need our young people to realize that the romantic notion of going far away from home, you know, go to college across the country, you don't need to escape that far, and there are advantages to staying more close, you know, by the time they have kids. You know, you want the parents and grandkids, grandparents around. And so those are longer term, you know, bigger picture considerations, you know. But short of having, you know, restructuring the family to be closer, there are, you know, we have the possibility to learn. We have technology. We have books. We have, you know, information. And, you know, people are open and are willing to learn these better ways, you know. Self-improvement is very much in our culture, in modern American culture. And so, you know, we're just missing some healthy guidelines, and that is something that I hope I'm filling in the gap, because it's so necessary. You know, people really need to know these wise ways, these old ways that we've lost that we need to bring back in, on how to use your feet. You know, we now have modern things. We have pavement and asphalt and concrete and flat shoes and so on, and so we've forgotten how to use our feet. You know, but even with the pavements and the shoes, we can learn to use our feet in a healthy way and preserve our basic foot health. And that goes for every part of the body, you know. There are wise ways to use your shoulders, to use your back, to bend, to walk. You know, there are wise old ways to do everything, and it behooves us to learn those.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So is there going to, I mean, usually with learning something new, there's always going to be a period that it might be more painful for a while until your body
gets
used to it.
It doesn't work like that. you know, what I teach people is that pain is a highly evolved mechanism. Nature designed pain for us to tell us to, hey, do something differently. So I always tell my students, if you have any new pain or an exacerbation of your current pain, let me know immediately, because that's a signal not to go there. And we'll find you another way to navigate around that pain or weakness or injury or what have you that's causing pain, so that we don't have to go through pain. This is not about no pain, no gain. It is not about working through pain. And no, we don't find that our students have a period of exaggerated pain before they get better. No, it's kind of smooth sailing, and very often from the very first lesson, they have diminished pain, because we're teaching them these very powerful ways, stretch sitting, stretch lying, where they're getting like 15 hours of stretch in their back, and they're relieving the pressure on their discs and nerves and so on. So it's usually up, not bumpy road.
Okay, well, that's good, because what I was thinking about, you know, if you've been sitting incorrectly for 60-some years like me, and I started sitting correctly and doing these things the right way, I was just thinking that it might bring those muscles into use that I probably maybe used for a long time.
You're right. You know, there are some muscle sorenesses that come into, like when you're squeezing your buttocks as you walk, for example, you know, if those muscles have been asleep for a few decades, then, you know, if you go for a 5-mile hike, it's going to be sore. But I wouldn't call that the same. You know, some muscle soreness, that's okay, you know, as long as it's in the right places for good reason. But that's different from pain, you know.
Yeah.
Like, we don't want pain. A little bit of muscle soreness sometimes happens also when muscles have been tight for a long time and they get stretched and they dump lactic acid into the surrounding tissues, and that can cause a little bit of muscle soreness. But that doesn't feel threatening, and usually people don't call it pain. They'll call it soreness. They'll call it something, you know, muscle fatigue. That is all fine and par for the course. But it's just,
okay,
you know, the nervy kind of pain or unusual pains, uninterpreted pains, new pains. We don't like to travel through those.
Okay, yeah. Maybe, and because that is what I was thinking of, I probably just said it wrong then. Well, you mentioned how we walk. Have we gotten into the habit of walking incorrectly too?
You know, I hate to have this message that we're kind of doing everything incorrectly, you know, when it comes to musculoskeletal.
That's why you're here to tell us how to do it right.
It's so sad, because, you know, we have so much potential, and then we handicap ourselves by kind of, you know, the lurching and shuffling. And so a very common walking pattern is to kind of fall forward and then stick the leg out to block the fall. And with that comes a thud or a heavy sound and a lot of impact to every single weight-bearing joint in the body. And, you know, if you can hear someone walking, that's what they're doing. They're falling forward and they're blocking their falls. And what a normal human, you know, primal walking pattern is you are propelling yourself forward, and then you come to a very soft landing, pin drop silent, the way all your hunter-gatherer ancestors surely walked, because otherwise they wouldn't have even survived, you know. Prey and predators would have heard them and they would not have survived. So we know just from commonsensical arguments and also from observation of modern-day hunter-gatherers that they walked softly. And so that is what I teach people, is how to use your glutes and your feet and your leg muscles, a whole bunch of muscles, to propel you in a very smooth and also elegant way. And then you land very gently. And this is a lesson I just love to teach, you know, all ages, because older people, you know, they're afraid of falling, and with good reason, because if you fall, you know, and break your hip, break your pelvis, that's not good news at all. You know, high mortality rate, miserable. And so they're afraid to go out and so on. And so we teach them to start using their glutes in this very precise way, and it is very learnable. It's not you know, trivial. It takes a little bit of coaching, but everybody learns it. And then they're walking in a totally different way, and they have more balance, and they're not so they. We have tons of people who've given up their walkers and given up their walking sticks and are much more confident going out and about. And so this is a really fun lesson to teach, you know, how to walk in a strong, upright, much more steady way.
You think we could at least do that, right? But I have noticed people now, I notice myself shuffling now. I was in a wheelchair for years, so I'm thinking that it probably has something to do with it. But when I do that, it's like, oh, man, Shirley, don't do that, because it reminds me of being old and disabled again. But I catch myself once in a while doing that. But I don't think I thump when I walk. Now I want to get up and walk just to find out.
Yeah. You know, but the good news is it can change so quickly. You know, in a matter of a week, you can completely change your walking by learning, by getting really good guidelines on how to do it. I describe it in my DVD, but this is a thing that you really want hands-on guidance with. And so, you know, locating a teacher either in the area or putting a request out to us, you know, to request a teacher to come to your area is the way to go on learning to walk.
Oh, that would be wonderful. How about on Skype? I mean, you can do video conferencing.
We do that.
Like,
you know,
that.
We do one-on-one. We do one-on-one appointments with people on Skype, and it's surprisingly effective because, you know, I mean, modern technology is so amazing. We can see exactly what they're doing. They can see what we're doing. And we can say, no, a little bit more. Put your fist here. Now push back on the rib cage. Now can you feel your spine, the dent in your spine has diminished. And, you know, okay, go a little bit to the right. And, you know, it works. It's amazing.
Isn't that, I mean, wonderful. This internet is just, it's opened the world to so many more possibilities that, you know, a lot of people for money and maybe for health issues can't just jump on a plane and come to you, to wherever you're
true,
at.
True.
But, I mean, it's so wonderful to have all these tools now. I cannot believe it. So a person, now your method is actually copyrighted, and it's called the Gokhale method, correct?
Right. It's we trademark the name because, you know, it's very – I want the quality of instruction to be very high. So we're very selective about who we pick as teachers. You know, these are people who are already wellness practitioners. We have physicians. We have acupuncturists, chiropractors, massage therapists, people who really are already very skilled in working with wellness and so on. And then I train them in my technique. And then they teach the course. And we have all kinds of technology. We have an iPhone app that we use to help track the changes in posture. You know, we have before pictures and in-between pictures and after pictures, and we just click a button and the person gets it so they can actually see their progress. And so, you know, people are getting very, very good help and a sense of their change, and then they feel the relief and symptoms. So, you know, just want that quality and the results, the effectiveness to be kept at a very high standard. So that's why we trademark the name, because, you know, I don't want people to be using the name to at a lower quality of instruction.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I just caught what you said, that normally, and everyone is not the same, of course, we all understand that I may have a different experience than someone else, but basically, just starting out, I mean, people get discouraged so easily. I think, again, in this culture, we don't have a lot of patience. I have zero. So the fact that you could actually notice some improvement in a short amount of time, that's great.
Yeah. It gives encouragement, you know, and then it helps people want to try a little harder for the next thing because, you know, now they're sleeping well. So, you know, they're encouraged, they dare to hope. That's a big thing. You know, a lot of people don't dare to hope because they've been on such an emotional roller coaster. They've tried so many things that have failed that they don't dare to hope. They don't dare to invest. They don't want to be foolish, found foolish yet again. And so this is the biggest problem we face, actually. And so, you know, trying to encourage people to hope and to invest, and we don't ask for a lot of money at all. You know, it's a small investment. The book costs next to nothing, and the DVD doesn't cost that much, less than a massage. And, you know, hands-on instruction costs less than a series of you know, massage sessions or chiropractic sessions. And you're actually getting, you know, something to address the root of the problem. So we don't ask for a lot, but, you know, there's this emotional resistance of daring to hope because, you know, it just feels so terrible to have your hopes dashed. And so, you know, what we need to encourage people is, like, just because, you know, so many things have failed does not mean that there isn't something that will actually succeed, you know. And so you have to open your brain and open your courage, you know, and see if it makes sense, because, you know, I believe very strongly there is a solution for most of these musculoskeletal problems, and we just need to get people on the road and back to recovery and functioning again and having confidence in their bodies, you know. So for me, you know, it's been 20 years. I have no pain whatsoever, you know, and it doesn't inhibit me. I can plan my life, you know, without having to consider, oh, you know, maybe I won't be comfortable in this bed, or my back might hurt, or you know, what if I can't lift things, or, you know, none of that. You know, I can just count on my body, you know, and I have reason to as well. It's not just a kind of empty hope. It's just it makes sense, and so that's how we want our society to be. And that's what the message I'm trying to get across is dare to hope and be sensible about what you choose, you know, have it make sense, have it be checked out, and then go for it, you know.
No, absolutely. That's why the name of the show. I started this quite a while back in 2007, but it used to be called something else. And when I realized so many of the problems are people don't have hope anymore. They have a chronic illness that there's no cure for. Like, I have something called reflex sympathetic dystrophy. And after a while, it's like, well, there's nothing we can do. We could do surgery. We could amputate your hands. We could amputate, you know, it's like, whoa, wait a minute, you know. So it does get discouraging to be told, well, there's just not a lot we can do. And everyone has got to have hope. I mean, I think that's important for every single person, no matter what they're struggling with, is to know that, you know, it's not hopeless. Just keep looking and investigating. And, I mean, there's so much out there, like your method, that I'm sure many people have not heard of. And there's so many people with the back issues that I certainly will spread the word myself. And I absolutely love the book and will try it. I just... I'm still looking at it. I haven't tried any of them yet. But
it's fun book. It's a fun book. Yeah,
it is. It is, and it's very helpful. There, like as I was saying earlier, there's so many pictures and diagrams, and
but
just talking about stretching makes me want to stretch.
it's a good place to start. You know,
absolutely.
Just this morning, until 5 minutes before the show, I was working with a young man. Beautiful young man, you know, high up in a software company. And, you know, here he's been struggling for years and decades with back pain and has had to give up all his favorite activities. And, you know, so every night was with the ice pack, and several times he'd wake up in severe pain and not be able to go to sleep. And, you know, I just taught him his second lesson. No more pain at night. Done. No ice pack. None. So he's lying there. He says, I don't want to get up from here. It feels so good. And then I said, you know, we should start videotaping you because you're so articulate. And he says, you know, I don't want to be dramatic, but I actually thought that I might be heading towards committing suicide because I'd given up everything that I love to do. And I wasn't able to work anymore. And I was, you know, he had one failed surgery. And so, you know, I mean, and this is, like, you would never dream that of him. You know, he just looks like a high-functioning, really positive person. And here he's telling me that, you know, his life was, I mean, I know what that feels like. I've been there myself, you know. Like, you look at your life, and it you're a cripple, you know. And all the things you dreamed of or anticipated in your life are not no longer possible. And that's just devastating and so unnecessary most of the time. I mean, this guy is just two lessons. The guy's turned around. His life is looking completely different today than it did last week. You know, it's
amazing.
Crazy. It is crazy.
Yeah. Well, because if you do have to schedule your activities around your back, it's like, well, you know, I mean, young kids, I mean, skydiving and doing this and doing that and all kinds of. In fact, when I was first diagnosed with my spinal stenosis, the one thing he said to me, you know, other than there's nothing we can do, he goes, stay out of the dune buggy. My husband builds and we used to race dune buggies, you know, and that's jarring and, you know. And that was the first thing he said to me. Well, you know, it's like, okay, well, what can we do? And it's like, don't get in the dune buggy anymore. It's like, thank you very much. Appreciate that. That was not very helpful. But, yeah, absolutely. Well, the hour has passed. I cannot believe how fast it went. You were so full of information.
Well, it was a pleasure.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is just so exciting. It's got me wanting to get right back into the book and start trying. I'll start with simple things, like sitting up straight and breathe. I do the breathing already just because someone else has got on to me about shallow breathing, you know.
So I
do that. But I've really enjoyed speaking to you. I absolutely highly recommend this book. And you can check out the website. I'll have to check out those three teleseminars, too. It's www.kahalemethod.com, and it is posted in the chat room. Check out the website. Absolutely highly recommend this book. It's just wonderful. And I want to thank you so much, Esther, for coming on and speaking with us today.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Whoa,
hey. Whoa. I've been waiting on the sunset, bills on my mindset, I can't deny it, getting higher than my income, income's breadcrumbs, I've been trying to survive, the goal is the sun gets right around sunset, helps me realize, this is just a journey, drop your words. Turn out fine, oh, you turn out fine, fine, oh, you turn out fine, but you gotta keep your head up, oh, and you can let your head down, hey, you gotta keep your head up, oh, and you can let your head down, hey, I know it's hard. Pockets, kicking these rocks, it's kind of hard to watch this life go by. I'm buying into skeptics, skeptics mess with the confidence in my eyes. I'm seeing all the angles, thoughts get tangled. I start to compromise my life and my purpose. Is it all worth it? Am I gonna turn out fine? Oh, you turn out fine. Fine, oh, you turn out fine. But you gotta keep your head up, oh,